This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. Hey, everybody. Today's guest is my good friend, Mike Herrera. Mike and I go way back, and it's always a pleasure anytime we have the chance to catch up with one another. Mike chose the MXPX song Let's Ride to discuss today. This is a newer song from the band's vast catalog that was released in 2018 from their self-titled record. The song has quickly become a fan favorite among MXPX fans. We touched on the fact that the lyrics are super relatable on a number of levels to just about anybody that listens to it, and that is one of the reasons the song has resonated so well. We talk about the importance of today's technology, from streaming services to video games, and how that plays into a song's success. And while reading the lyrics of this song, I mention how they triggered a memory about the first time I met Mike all the way back in the year 1996. For all this and much more, stay tuned.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
We released the self-titled record in 2018, and that's what Let's Ride is on. That's when it first appeared. And so we released this song. We were under the impression that it would go away in a few weeks. And that's kind of what a lot of records were doing, a lot of new records. And new music for a band like us didn't usually sell or spread. Luckily, we were wrong, you know, very wrong. You know, it took you back. It did that for everybody that heard it.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect that to happen, to be honest, because you know, when you're writing and you're working on it, you know it's a good song or this or that, or you think it's a good song, but you're really close to it, so you don't hear it for the first time the way other people hear it for the first time. So I think that was huge, and it was the first new music people had heard from us since 2014. We had put out a couple singles, but that's more you know, to the fandom. But what I mean is this is a wider release.
Well, and so, to go back, you know, the record prior to this was 6 years before in 2012, Plans Within Plans. So you had a 6 year gap. I guess you did record some singles and whatnot, but that's a pretty big gap in the scheme of things. Was this song specifically written for the self-titled record, or was this a song maybe you wrote for Plans Within Plans or shortly thereafter that kind of sat around, or was it a newer idea for the self-titled album?
It was a newer idea. It was one that I wrote just in the middle of the whole writing process. And so 2017 was when I was writing and working on the record with the band. And I would just take a new song almost every week. We'd practice like once a week. It was an insane year. Like, we never practiced that much, right? So, but we got to practice about once a week, and just our schedules lined up, and I'd bring them about a new song a week, and we'd just be hashing out these songs, and some of them didn't fit right, or, you know, weren't quite right, and I would rewrite a part, and then boom. But there was some stuff to this that we changed up a little bit. The bridge wasn't the bridge until later, you know, after playing it through with the band a little bit. And I think the pre-chorus was maybe originally the chorus. And I was like, I need a better chorus, you know? And so I wrote the chorus of Let's Ride. And they're like, oh, okay, that's the one. That's the chorus. So that's something I didn't do back in the day. Like, back when I first started writing, I would write a song and there's the song. And, and then you're like, let's write another song. So like this, of course, these days, you know, I'll write a bit and then I'll think about it and I'll be like, something's not sitting right with me, and I'll go back and figure out what that is about it. But yeah, this song was a song that I came up with, you know, the first line about the time that I turned 14, and that could go anywhere. That could be a country song, you know, it could be anything.
Sure. And I want to get into all that in a second. And you kind of started to answer some of my questions that I haven't asked yet with talking about the chorus and the pre-chorus, which is awesome. You went into that, and I do want to talk about that, but real quick, did you produce this record? Was it self-produced? I couldn't find that info out.
Yes, it was self-produced with MXPX, you know, me and the guys, and Tom Tuchilla, our manager.
Right.
He helped. He had a lot of input. you know, but he wasn't ever in the room with us. It was okay. More just like he would help, like I would send him a bunch of songs and he'd be like, oh, I like this one. I like this one, or this one's, you know, work on this. So a little bit of what a producer does.
It sounds great. It sounds awesome. You know, I think it stands up there with any of the major label records you did with name producers. I think it sounds awesome. And that's why I wanted to ask that. You know,
I would mention one more thing. Casey sure. Bates engineered, recorded, and mixed it. So, I mean, he knows what he's doing as well. He's from Seattle. And although he didn't produce it, you know, he had a big hand in the sound. And we kind of told him what we wanted it to be. And he's like, I like that. All right, let's do this. So.
Okay, so you kind of started to touch on it, and we're going to go through all the lyrics here in a second. I want to break down the arrangement because I find the arrangement fascinating in this song, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But the song, when you wrote it, and you know, you'd mentioned a moment ago, sometimes you'll as an older songwriter, you know, you've had some experience, you'll go back to a song and say, that's not sitting right with me. I want to do something. When you wrote the song, was the lyrics and the music done at the same time? Did it just kind of you wrote it and that's what it is, or did it go through any evolutions when you showed it to the band?
It definitely went through some evolutions, but not much. Like it was more or less the progressions that I had written, but it was more about like where do we put you know, this part and how loud do we play it. And but the way I write, a lot of times I'll come up with a lyric and I might come, you know, strum a chord. So about the time that I turned 14, you know, that could be there without actually knowing that it's going down to the F sharp minor or whatever it is.
F sharp minor. That's exactly what it is.
So, as if I don't know, you know, so like, I don't necessarily have all the parts right when I'm writing those first lyrics. It's just, what I do is I iterate on it or reiterate on it, where I'll play that part. And I do this with choruses more, but I'll play that part and I'll just try lyrics and try doing the verse melody differently and see what kind of just fits. And if I can remember to do it again, even though I'm recording everything on voice memos, if I can remember to do that again, then I just start moving into what fits right for me.
Okay.
And sometimes that can be bad. You know, if you're like, oh, I always do this one thing over and over, then you have to consciously think about that. But I try not to worry about that. It's just, it's all about what is fitting together, what's making sense. And the 14 thing sparked me, the age thing. And then I'm like, well, obviously I can go on. I can go to 16. And, you know, and from there, you know, you write a bunch of different numbers and then see what works, right? Like, oh, well, that 19 one works, but I don't know about the 21.
Well, you know, you mentioned a moment ago, and I want to tell you, you did a fantastic job of setting up this album and this song. I mean, you guys did a Kickstarter, which gets your fans involved. Let's Ride was featured on the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, the re-release of that.
Yeah.
Which that's huge. Okay.
That's huge.
That is huge. And this video on YouTube has 2 million views. That is nothing to sneeze at. And, you know, I'll say it again. If this song was on one of your earlier records, it would be a classic now. It would. This song's,
absolutely.
This song's awesome. You know, I've said that on past episodes. The last Metallica record had one of my favorite Metallica songs ever. If it was on Master of Puppets, it'd be revered as a classic today. But
yeah.
Let's Ride doesn't have 25 years of memories attached to it for people. No, yeah. Matter how good the song is, it's tough to get people to want to listen to a new artist and or an older artist, excuse me, with their newer music. And you guys seem to have accomplished that with this.
It's been insane. Like Tony Hawk was a huge personal victory for me. So like getting to be part of that, you know, that is huge. And it brings back all those nostalgic memories. And now we're just going to start building onto this song, those memories from right now. So here's the thing. We never paid attention to Spotify. We did a Kickstarter that went amazing. And that was sort of an eye opener. And we never paid attention to Spotify, Apple Music pre-release at all. We didn't even have access to our artist page, you know, all the services or whatever, till weeks after the self-titled record came out. That's how little we paid attention, you know.
Yeah.
But soon we realized, you know, we should probably pay more attention to this. This is actually, we can make money doing other things than just playing live. We can diversify, make money on new music. It was like a huge eye opener. So now, after spending 2 years really working these new songs, Let's Ride is number one. It's our most popular song on Spotify. And like even more than Chick Magnet, Punk Rock Show, all that. So that's pretty incredible. Impressive for a band that's been around 28 years. But, you know, that self-titled record that came out in 2018, hitting people, taking them back to the early years of their life, hitting that nostalgia in a way that, like you said, you can't get in a new song. We kind of got some built-in nostalgia with this song that shouldn't have been there if it was about something else. But it really, you know, the fact that it hit and it's still hitting, you know, with even being on Tony Hawk is giving it new life. Being on your show is giving it new life. It's what every band really wants, is to have longevity and then still be able to make something new that people care about. So thank you, everybody that listened. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, and again, I love the track, and you guys gave yourselves the best foot forward you could. You know, as veteran bands, it's hard to appreciate certain things sometimes, like, hey, there's this new thing out, you know, it's called TikTok, or there's this thing called Spotify. Well, how does that play into us? And sometimes you don't know until finally the light bulb goes off. You're like, wait a second, there's other income streams here. There's other stuff here. Mm-hmm. You know, something like Tony Hawk, for instance, with this song, that opens you up to a way younger audience that weren't even born, some of them, back in the 90s when you guys started. And I know you're seeing that now as my band is, with parents bringing their children to the shows, and there's two and sometimes three generations with it, which is fantastic. So I'd like to get into the lyrics now. And, you know, the first lyric you mentioned is about the time that I turned 14, which I love the second line, because you rhyme 14 somehow with landscaping, the way you sing it.
About the time that I turned 14, I got a job to
And that's an art form. It really is. Like, people don't get it. Like, but when I sat down with this song, got the guitar out, and I went through it, and I'm like, that really struck me right off. About the time that I turned 14, I got a job doing landscaping. Doesn't seem when I'm talking that it would rhyme, but Mike makes it rhyme. Check out the track. Those days were long, and my old boss was mean. About the time that I turned 16, I got a car and no place to be. I'd fill up the tank and drive out to the sea. That's the first verse. And I'm assuming this is autobiographical.
It is. And it's weird because it's not just autobiographical. It's also, there's also hints of like Tom's life. Like Tom, our guitar player, Tom Wisniewski, it's also true of me that I had no place to be at 16 with a car, but he would do the same things. And in fact, nowadays he does this all the time. So what he does is he'll on the weekends, if we don't have band stuff or whatever, a lot of times over the summer he's been driving out to the sea, not because of the song, because he loves to just go out and drive. He'll go out and hike, go to the beach, whatever it is. He likes to get out into nature. And every time I hear that line, I think of Tom. And so like there must be other people hearing this thinking of their own life or something from their, something that they know about. So yeah, it's autobiographical, but I feel like everybody's had a mean boss.
Yeah, well, everybody has had a mean boss. And at the same time, you know, you had kind of mentioned, you know, I don't know, you said something alluding to a country song a moment ago, but yeah, this is kind of down to, you know, hometown lyric type vibe here that I think everyone can kind of relate to. And I think that's some of the other reason that this song has latched onto people.
That's true. You know, we band guys, songwriters, can and have written a lot of songs about how cool it is to be in a band and how cool it is to tour. And it is, but not everybody can relate to that, you know? So like, that's another reason why I think people just relate to this song, is because there's nothing about it that screams, you can't do that too, you know? You know, so like, Or you may, you know, you haven't been there. So I think the video reflected that pretty cool too. You know, it was about this young kid being bullied and then discovering music and kind of coming into his own and finding who he really is. And then later on in his young adult life, finding a partner to live, you know, live life with and make an MXPX baby, you know? So,
well, you know, and you touched on it a moment ago. Like I said, you were starting to answer my questions before I asked them. The pre-chorus of this song to me is a chorus. And the pre-chorus is, "The Rockies ain't too far from here if we drive all night. The cold air will do you well in the mountain morning light." And it's interesting because the pre-chorus is in the song three times. The actual chorus is only in the song twice. You know, usually it's flip-flopped, and we'll get more into that too as we go through this, which I love. But this part is just, it's so catchy that I could see why you thought this was a chorus initially.
Yeah. I mean, I love playing that song. It's funny, the song itself is, it's at one of those in-between tempos. So it's a gallop, but it's not super fast. So sometimes that strumming can be a little funky. So like at first, like right at first when we were sort of like starting to play it after we recorded, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this live. This is so weird. But of course, you know, played it a few more times. It was fine. But it is a little, it's not like an automatic, like I can nail this. I have to like kind of think about it.
Well, isn't that weird sometimes when you write songs? Because, you know, we're live bands through and through, and we always think, at least I do when I'm writing something, how this is going to translate to the live stage. But sometimes you'll go in and record and you'll get into, you know, I was talking about this on a show the other day, strumming, you know, different strumming patterns, and you'll do it in the studio, and then you'll go play it live and realize, wait a second, how do I do that and sing at the same time?
Totally. There's been a lot of those over the years.
Yeah. It's like, it turns into like, how the hell am I going to do this? From the pre-chorus, we go into chorus number one, and chorus one is, "So let's ride. Let's ride on through the rain. Come on and take me anywhere that you want to be. So let's ride." And I'm going to go on the limb here and say, so let's ride is just kind of like a metaphor of like going through life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can take it literally if you want to. I love riding skateboards. I love riding motorcycles, everything, you know, but but no, it's a metaphor. I mean, it's everything. It's and that's maybe another reason why it hits people right, is because it's just such a simple term that you've heard before. But I'm kind of good at that, I guess, as a songwriter, taking the most simple things that anybody said, but just hasn't necessarily been put in a punk song yet.
Yeah, no, and that again, and that's like a bit of an art form to be able to do that and be able to be okay with a simple idea. You know, the further I get in my career, I'm always trying to cram too much stuff into a song. Like, it can't be that simple. Well, sometimes you have to listen to what the song just wants to be. And yes, it can be that simple. Something else you mentioned a moment ago that I thought was interesting. You said, you know, it's kind of that in-between beat. Because I almost feel like the one thing about this song, if it was released in the 90s, it might have been up 4 or 5 clicks.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, because we were all playing stuff too fast back then. And that was kind of the thing to do. But I think you guys nailed the tempo on this one. We get into the second verse, "By the time that I turned 19 is the first lyric. And well, by the time you turn 19 is when I pretty much first met you. That was around the mid 90s.
Yeah.
Because I remember meeting you out in Seattle, and your mother was backstage. And, you know, I believe your mother was helping or managing your career at that point. And I remember thinking how young you looked. And I was only a couple of years older than you. But, you know, you see pictures in magazines, whatever. And we had been listening to you guys, and we got to meet you. I'm like, these guys are really young. And you were 19.
Yeah. We were always the youngest band for a long time.
No, it's crazy. When I read that lyric today, I immediately went back. I'm trying to think, was it DV8 we played with you guys the first time out there or
something that sounds right. DV8,
maybe DV8 or one of the other, what was the other place? Rock Candy. It might've been Rock Candy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. One of those places. And I remember your mom, and you didn't see too many moms backstage, maybe a dad once in a while, but I'm like, whoa, his mom's here. And like, oh, she kind of helps with the band. Like, well, that's different, you know, but,
yeah, not very punk.
Well, it was, yeah, I never got that from it. I just got like, that's strange. His mom's here, but that's kind of cool. You know, like, And I actually remember thinking, it shows you how young I was, and I don't know if it was naive necessarily, but thinking like, wow, like these guys must really be onto something. Like if their mom's like hanging out with them, like she must think they're going to be like famous or something. Yeah. that's the kind of stuff you think about when you're that young. Like my dad wasn't hanging out, you know, like trying to manage the damn band. So by the time that I turned 19, I'd seen so much and I was still green. It's taken me a time or two to learn the things I watch you do for me. There I was at 29. I can't believe I'm still alive. Though it was never easy, yeah, you and me were born to survive. And who's the you in this?
Well, for me, it's, you know, my significant other, but I think for anybody, it's just their person or their best friend or their brother or sister. It could be anybody. Yeah. So I wrote it for me, but I also wrote it for anybody. So that's kind of, so Chris, you know, it's funny, Chris, Tom asked me that. He asked me, what are you talking about? Cause I mean, his mom passed away right around like a little bit before we were working on this record. And so I think also he kind of has a lot of memories of her when he hears this song, which is intense to think about, you know.
I'm sorry to hear that. I didn't know his mom passed. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Years ago now. Yeah. But you know, but having something like that come up, and I just wonder, I should probably ask him, but I wonder. So I think a lot of people have things about songs, and this song in particular just hits people in their own way. I can think of a lot of other reasons, but I think this is honestly like the true emotional reason why people like the song.
Yeah, well, it can speak to, you know, and that's why music just talks to people differently. Everyone can take something away from it, and this is one of those songs that just does that. You know, I think you hit a home run here, and I think it's one of the definitive MXPX songs, you know, and especially this late in your career to come up with something like this is testament to just, you know, how good of a songwriter you are. And I truly mean that. And, you know, from verse two, we go back to that pre-chorus. Pre-chorus number two is the same as the first one. The Rockies ain't too far from here. If we drive all night, the cold air will do you well in the mountain morning light. And again, that comes on. I'm just like, man, it feels like a chorus, but I realized it wasn't when we got to the actual chorus. Here is something that maybe the early days of my songwriting, less than Jake, I do a trick like this, but I can't believe how well it works here. You don't go into a second chorus here. You go into a bridge with this just crazy drum beat. The whole feel of the song changes here. It's like da 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 da. And you're still getting the lyric. And then I was like, wait a second. At first, I thought it was a chorus and you just changed the feel and the drum beat up because I read the first lyric. So let's ride. That was my escape, a way to change the tape that was playing in my head. And then I realized, wait a second, this isn't the second chorus. This is a bridge. How did that come about? The thought process in that of like, okay, it's the pre-chorus. We're just going to go into the second chorus, but no, we're gonna throw a left curve here and do the bridge.
Mainly probably because the song was getting too long. So we're like, we gotta do something.
It's a good answer. It's a good answer.
Yeah. A lot of times I've done the pre-chorus, second pre-chorus to bridge. I've done it before. So to me, it didn't seem that weird. I'll just go into these vocal, sweeping vocal kind of things. And I think that's probably just what happened with this bridge is I was looking to do something and I wasn't sure what to do and just started playing it. And once I start playing it, I'll just keep going to where, you know, like you as a songwriter probably know this. You just keep going to where you feel like it should go, but you don't know where it's going until you do it. So it's like, that's kind of what happened with this bridge musically.
Oh, I think it needed to happen too. That, like I said, the drums, the whole feel of it changes here. And that's what makes it so interesting and such a breath of fresh air. Not that the song was getting monotonous or in any way, shape or form, but it was such a great departure.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it needed to take you to a different place in order to like, okay, then come back down and end on that pre-chorus chorus.
And immediately after the bridge, we go into pre-chorus number three. And it's rare that you get three pre-choruses in the song. But again, this is almost like the baby brother to the chorus. It's like chorus number two in a way. And I'm so, I think it's so cool that it's in here. And I think it's warranted to be in here three times. Again, same lyrics. Why fix it if it's not broken? The Rockies ain't too far away from here. If we drive all night, the cold air will do you well in the mountain morning light. That's awesome. Was, Was that the way the song structure was from the beginning? The bridge went back to that, or did you toy of going to the bridge to the chorus and not doing the pre-chorus again?
We probably tried it. Now I'm trying to remember. We probably tried it just about every way it could go, and you kind of just figure out what works, what seems to move the song along at the right times. That's what we're trying to do anyway. You know, you don't always succeed, but that one I think is just one of those things where you try a few things and you're like, that's it. That's the way to do it. Or, you know, and like we were talking about earlier, when you have something weighing on, you're like, there's something just not sitting well with me with this song. Sometimes it's like an arrangement thing and not even a lyric thing. And it could be, we need to break down that chorus just a little bit, or pre-chorus just a little bit. Then you're ready to get back into that regular chorus part. But yeah, I agree with you that it is almost like a two-part chorus.
It really is, but it works perfectly. And I did want to ask Tom Ticilli, your manager. You said was he in the studio with you, or were you just kind of like sending him, you know, progress along the way to listen to?
Yeah, you know, we just send him progress.
Okay,
we'd practice, do some like practice demos. I'd be like, here's the new version. What do you think? That kind of stuff.
So it was
all pre-production stuff.
Okay, so I know you had someone else, I believe you said Casey, to mix the record.
Yeah, Casey Bates came in and recorded and mixed.
Oh, he did? He engineered.
Yeah, yeah, he engineered, yep. So he came to my studio here in Bremerton and just worked. It was great.
Did Casey have any input? Did you ever ask for it, or was he just a glorified engineer and kind of just sat back and behind the scenes, or did he have any input? Because some guys, you know how that works. Some guys are very vocal and you want their opinion, and other people, and they know their place, and they're not going to say anything.
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities, from easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock. DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He would have input now and again. For the most part, we knew what we were wanting to do already. But every now and then, something you're like, oh, we hadn't thought of that. Or now that we're hearing it, maybe we should do this differently or whatever. But yeah, sure. Like, he'll be like, input as far as let's do another, let's double this track, let's do that, you know, like all of that. Yes, of course, he's great.
And you stop taking the engineer's input when he suggests that Yuri should sing the song. That's when you're like, okay, dude, just shut up. No offense, Yuri, I love you.
Now Yuri's playing bass on the next record, so there's that. That was the compromise.
Full sleeve tattoos, lip rings. Chorus 3. Excuse me. Chorus 2.
Oh.
The last chorus of
That's true.
The last yeah, we got pre-chorus 3, but we never have a chorus 3. Chorus 2, we come directly into after pre-chorus 3. The first half is the same. So let's ride. Let's ride on through the rain. Come on and take me anywhere that you want to be. Then it goes halftime again, but it's not the same beat as the bridge. Okay, it's like a different halftime thing with Yuri doing some really cool drum stuff.
Let's ride, let's ride, let's follow the skyline.
And this is the only time in the song that it happens. Let's ride, let's ride, let's follow the skyline. And when we make it to the other side, we'll find all the bluest skies. And I love that it ends on the suspense chord C sharp. It never resolves back to G sharp. And that I've always loved. I call it the cliffhanger. Set this up a little bit. What was the thought of, you know what? Because typically here, a lot of times you would just double the chorus, you know, just make it twice the same thing. How did that other part come up? Was that something you were like, you know what? I don't want to double the chorus. I want something else to be different. Or had you maybe written this part to be the bridge or somewhere else in the song that it didn't work? Or was it all written how it is?
You know, that part was my Valhalla story in a way. It was sort of like I wanted to end it like that because I wanted to leave people thinking, I guess, about themselves, about their own life. And that's why it suspends like that. Also, suspending, not resolving a song can, not always, but can result in people wanting to just listen right again to the same song to like, I need to hear that one more time.
I've said that before. I don't know if anyone else is it. That's really cool that you say that, because I feel the same way. When I hear that, I call it the suspense chord, the cliffhanger. I want to put the song back on.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of two parts, but yeah, you know, leaving people thinking about death, thinking about mortality, thinking about in a good way though, not in a bad way, like not in a negative way. Like it's an uplifting part. It's, you know, all we can do is hope for the best and work towards that. But Valhalla, meaning whatever it is you believe, if you believe in a heaven or whatever, hopefully you get there someday. You know, that's the idea behind it.
Right. Okay. When you were doing the record, did this song stick out amongst the other songs? Were you like, this is the lead single, the hit, the one that's going to touch people? Or was it kind of just another song until it took a life on its own when you released it?
It was one of four that I knew was like, okay, this is like one of the stronger ones. But honestly, Friday Tonight was probably what we all thought was going to be the single up until, I don't know, a couple weeks before we released Let's Ride. But we thought Let's Ride or Friday Tonight, which Friday Tonight is number three on the record and Let's Ride is number four on the record. So between those, we basically were like, okay, it's got to be one of these that will be the best song on the record, or, you know, the thing that people cling to. The fact that it was Let's Ride, it kind of became a little bit more clear as we started thinking about it. Once we saw the video, we were just like, this is definitely the best way to tell the story of what we're doing right now. Self-titled record, MXPX, and fans, you know?
And when you say so, we, was this, besides the three of you in the band, was this management and everybody else close to you that was hearing the track? Felt the same way?
Yeah. It was the band and Tom Chichilla basically trying to figure out, okay, what do we do? Because we were, you know, we had the record on Kickstarter and that was great. And so it was up to us completely to release it and figure out what we were going to do. Because we, on Kickstarter, we said, you know, this is an independent release. We're going DIY. We're just going to try to promote it around the world and see what happens. So all the money that didn't go towards buying, you know, product to send out and all that, and pressing vinyl and all that, actually a lot of it went to marketing money.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, a lot of ads spent.
Well, no, and you guys marketed the heck out of it, and you know, kudos to your team, because it's been just really noticeable, not only what's happened with the band, but what's happened with your solo career outside of the band, your visibility. It's been fantastic to see what's happened the past couple of years. And I know that, again, we started the show off talking about your work ethic, which is certainly a huge part of it, but the team you got behind you has done a fantastic job. and you and I have talked about that, and it's been awesome to watch. When you went out to play this song, do you remember the first time that you played it live and what the audience reaction was?
Yes. It was, I think it was Los Angeles or something like, you know, maybe the Troubadour. I'm not sure exactly which was the first show we did after our record came out, but it was like definitely a Southern California show. It's been insane. I mean, one, people are singing the lyrics, and you're like, oh my gosh. When people come up to you and say, my mom watched the video, or my grandma watched the video, it's like...
Your 19-year-old so self funny. Wants to smack them and yourself.
Yeah. You know what? The success of the song, like what it made, it really helped us focus on doing what we wanted to do rather than being... Because we went broke making this record. We were absolutely broke. We depleted the band fund because we have a band account, you know, that just when we do shows and stuff and make merch or whatever it is, you know, we have a band account. But we hadn't been playing that many shows. We were working on the record for months.
Yeah.
In 2018. And so, yeah, it was a little crazy. So that's, you know, the Kickstarter really helped that out. But... realizing we can make money releasing music was huge. Realizing releasing merch, all of that, playing less shows so we could basically pick or choose the shows we wanted to do, mm-hmm. You know, in a way that works with our schedules, it made us realize we could make money in multiple places rather than just always touring. I mean, we love to tour, but man, you get so run into the ground sometimes. You need to take a break a little bit. But so our schedule was by design, not desperation. So in turn, it helped us enjoy being a band. I've never been closer to Tom and Yuri than we have been in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. And that, you know, making this new record and the success of the record really, really made a huge difference. You know, if it's like a bummer and nobody wants to hear your music, the band's gonna be a little less enthusiastic about hanging out with each other and going out and playing shows, you know?
Well, or creating a new record. I mean, ultimately we make music as artists for ourselves, but you know, mm-hmm. you want your fans to like your music. Ultimately they liked all your early stuff. You know, at least I think I'm getting better as a songwriter and as a performer. I want them to like the new stuff. So it is a little intimidating, and it's always for me. That's why I asked you, remember the first time you played Let's Ride. That first time I ever play a new song, I don't know what it is. It's always nerve-wracking. And once I do it the first time, then it's fine. No matter what the audience reaction is, if they're, you know, taking off for the exits or if they're singing every word, it's that first time is always just like, I'm like, you know, 10 and 2 clutching the wheel type thing.
Yeah, yeah. What if you could see audience like reactions as thought bubbles in their, you know, coming out off of people's heads, like you would like on a video or something.
These guys were so much better in the 90s.
It would be mostly love, but you would have like one like, or it'd be like a crap face or something, a poop face. Yeah. I don't know. We don't want to know what you're thinking.
I gotta get up early. Can't they just play Chick Magnet?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I went to Tom Petty and I didn't know his new songs nearly as well as, you know, his classics, but I would never ever think to like yell out play
Free Fallin',
you know, whatever. Yeah, Free Fall. I was gonna say Free Bird. I think that's not a Petty song. But there were people in the audience yelling like, come on, play what song we know or whatever. It's like, dude, come on.
Yeah, give the guy a break. So he's a legend.
Exactly.
Other thing I want to touch on real quick in the song, chord arrangement. Was the song ever, when you initially wrote it, was it more straight? There's a lot of accidentals in this song, and I've never talked about accidentals on the show. I'm trying to explain to the, in my mind right now to the listeners, it's basically holding a chord and taking one of your fingers and going over a half step, and there's a ton of that in this song. Mm. Was the song written more straight, and that was something that came later, or was the chord progression always kind of that?
No, I think that was the chord progression. I write a lot of accidentals, and thank you for naming that because I never knew it was called an accidental.
I learned that from Roger about 20 years ago, and I never forgot it.
So, wow.
Yeah.
It's funny. Tom always says that because I taught him, basically, when he joined MXPX, I taught him how to play guitar. I was like, all right, here's a minor chord. He's like, oh, okay. So, but yeah, a lot of the things like that, I would show him an accidental and I wouldn't tell him it was an accidental because I didn't know. I would just say like, I heard these are called devil chords.
Yeah,
and
that's a good
why
term.
We call them devil. Yeah, because you can do them with doing the devil sign, like with your fingers, uh-huh. with your hand. So you can do the chord with your first finger and your pinky finger.
Yep. And then the two are up. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Devil chord. But yeah, I mean, obviously, like, and then later on, I was like looking at, I don't know, I was looking at like maybe a Beatles lyric chord sheet, and I would see, okay, so, you know, G over G sharp, or sorry, G over G flat, or I guess that would be F sharp, same thing. But that's how you would write an accidental, or at least on a chord chart. Mm-hmm. But it was never called accidental there either, at least what I was reading.
Well, yeah, and then of course, you know, bands in our genre, NoFX is the kings of that. They do that a ton, and it's just cool. And I don't know, I just, when I was thinking of this song and I was breaking it down, like, because I have written songs without them, and I'll put them in later to spice it up. It's like, ah, this chord range is just kind of the samey, which, you know, this song isn't that complex chord wise until you get into those moves we were just talking about, which makes it really interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, look, we're gonna wrap up here in a minute. I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. I can't say it enough. You know, I've loved you and your band for, geez, 25 years now or longer. But I really, really love this song, and I'm so stoked that you picked it. I think it's one of the best songs you guys have ever written.
Dude, thank you so much, man. That blows me away. I appreciate it. And I respect you as a songwriter. You're insane. So,
well, I mean, thank you. That means a lot. Is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners with of everything that you have going on, either Mike Herrera solo or MXPX?
Well, dude, we've been kind of toiling in secret a little bit, and it just so happens this Friday, October 16th at 6:30 p.m., MXPX is going to host a live stream show, full band show from the studio here. It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. And we've been working on it and building this thing for like a month or two. It's been insane.
Awesome.
So thank you.
Congratulations. Are you going to play Let's Ride?
We're going to play Let's Ride three times now.
You got to play it, man. If the listeners, you know, got to play Let's Ride. That's great. And is this your first live stream within for the year within the pandemic?
Yeah, it's our first full band live stream. I did a bunch of solo live streams for Life in Quarantine sessions right when the pandemic hit, and that was a lot of fun. But we just, you know, we knew that things weren't going to be over just yet, and we could take our time and build something. So I literally just built, I mean, it's not going to look that much different if people have seen the inside of the studio, because it's mostly equipment that I had to buy and like hook up, but built a whole live stream setup.
Oh man, so that's really cool. Well, looking forward to that. And how can people find that? Go to mxpx.com.
That's the place.
Perfect. And for our listeners that don't know, where can they find Mike Herrera on all the socials?
You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook or whatever. It's Mike Herrera TD.
Perfecto. Well, hey, once again, buddy, I appreciate you taking the time to speak to me, and you've been asked about a lot from the listeners, and I know they're going to be stoked to hear this episode.
Dude, I'm so happy you had me on. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names, and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians, talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured band is La Manta, a catchy pop-punk band from Sacramento, California. On guitar and vocals, we have Kyle Olson. Also on guitar and vocals, Steve Smith. On the drums, Jason Chase. And on the bass, Scott Westerink. Here's a snippet of their song, Be There or Be Square, slowly going the way of Mark Ruffalo.
The Rap with Chris and Chris.
So before I even get into the song itself, I want to stress how cool it is that a band that's been around and been so good for so long, like MXPX, could release one of their most popular songs this far into their career.
Oh, it's remarkable. I even mentioned it to Mike in the episode. Just they really gave themselves their best foot forward with this. You know, doing a Kickstarter involves your fans. So the fans had a vested interest getting on the Tony Hawk Pro Skater game. Just all of that combined, the fact that the song is just vintage MXPX sounding, it was like lightning in a bottle for them, and good for them. I love the track.
Dude, this song is great, and I'm kind of ashamed to say this, but I hadn't heard it before this. It's from 2018, and me, who admittedly listens to a lot of R&B music and pop music nowadays, didn't hear this song before that, but man, am I glad I did now, because like you said, this is vintage MXPX song written now, and I agree that this is one of their best, if not their best song. And you know, like you said in the episode, this song doesn't have 25 years of memories attached to it, but there's a couple things. The lyrical content of the song instantly gives you that nostalgia feeling, because the song in itself is about nostalgia. It's about looking back and reflecting on your life. So that taps right into that feel, even if you don't have those memories attached to it. And on top of that, it sounds like MXPX, but just the very best of MXPX. They didn't try to do a whole new style or anything. They just took the style they're good at and put their best foot forward with it in 2018 and made what I believe is one of their best songs ever.
Yeah, and all the successes is just really well deserved. I'm really glad that it got the attention, because, you know, Mike and I even touched on it at the end of the episode just about how, you know, we as artists, you write songs for yourself ultimately, but you want the audience to like them. And they immediately, he said it was immediate. They went out and played the song for the first time in LA and the crowd went berserk. They were singing the lyrics back to him. And there's not much of a greater feeling as a performer to have that kind of adulation from your fans. It's awesome.
Especially with a new song.
Right.
You know, you expect that from older songs, but from a new song, that's not something that always happens. It takes a few years. It takes time for people to live through that song and with that song and have that song playing throughout a summer or something like that, or whatever it is, or have it playing through an important time in their life. And so that takes time.
Yeah. And I've always admired bands that'll go out and they'll open a show with a brand new song. It's like, wow, that takes some cojones, because you know, it's tough to do. I know what the audience reaction is going to be when we play All My Best Friends Are Metalheads. I'm not so sure what it's going to be like. Right. We roll out a new track and spring it on them right out of the gate.
Right. Mike touched on this in the episode, and you talked about it too, is we all do this. Everyone in a band at some point has a song about being in a band. I know it's unavoidable, because that's what you're living. You're speaking your truth through your songs. But there's only a small percentage of people that can relate to that, those type of songs. So when you have a song like Let's Ride that literally anyone can relate to, you know that it's going to have more of a mass appeal.
Yeah, and I think that's why it had such an immediacy, and it's kind of instant when you read the lyrics. It can, you know, it could be for anybody. And it's funny, this song really triggered a memory that I hadn't thought about in over 20 years. That line in the second verse, by the time that I turned 19, that's about the time that I met Mike, and we talked about his me seeing his mom backstage and everything. And so this song, not only being relatable from a lyrical aspect, it was relatable because I was like, wow, that just out of nowhere took me back to a memory I haven't thought in 20 years. And I remember the first time that I met him, and it's pretty cool.
Hey, one other thing that I wanted to touch on in here, which is really funny. It's a funny conversation to have in the year 2020, is talking about album track listing and position of the songs on an album. And why I say that is because now we're living in the age of singles and we're living in the age of streaming. So now it seems like people don't think about that as often. That was so important when our bands are starting, up until streaming really took over and singles became the thing. That was important. And what is funny is that song 3 and song 4 on the album were 90% of the time, those were the singles. And I guess my question to you is, why? Why wouldn't song 1 and 2 be the singles? Or why wouldn't it be an order of like, oh, we're going to release this song first. That song won. Why was it 3 and 4? Do you know?
I think you were trying to make a balanced record back then. I think you had a lead-off track that was just maybe a little more immediate, I don't know, for your hardcore fan base. Maybe that was the faster song. And then you got into a little bit of the meat of the record, 3 or 4, and that was your singles. But what you just said is happening now. Now you're front-loading records. We just had, Less Than Jake had this conversation with our label about our new album. You're front-loading your records. So the first song on down is your strongest tracks, because they know that if people are streaming and they start with a record that they, heck, at this point, they hope they make it to track 2 or 3, because people's attention spans aren't what they used to be. Music is free now for the most part. It's easily accessible through multiple platforms, and you click on a song. I don't like this one. Next. So now you're front loading albums with the best, but I kind of agree with you. I that's a really good point of back in the day. You would have thought that here's the first single. It's the first track on the record, but it typically was 3, 4, 5.
Right. And it's funny that you said this, and I know that Punchline did it like crazy. I know Less Than Jake did it, but those first songs that might not be like a radio single, but they are just like in your face. Punchline did that so much. And so many of our first tracks on our albums are like fast, punk rock, like really in your face. I know, think about Hello Rockview. You guys come out with Last One Out of Liberty City is just in your face, and it's awesome. But now, if you're trying to appeal to a mass audience, then maybe you would have wanted, well, think about Anthem. Maybe you would have wanted Science first, or, you know, something where the song that would have the most appeal, because yeah, I can testify to that, man. Track one now on the last couple Punchline albums it's always the track with the most Spotify plays.
Cause that's the first one they're hearing. Yeah, absolutely.
And it sucks to have to play the Spotify game, but you kind of have to now. And I believe me, if I really do keep my ear to the ground with all new music, and I'm always keeping up with what's going on and the way people are consuming music. But if there's one thing that's old school about me, is I like an album, man. I like to spend my time and enjoy an album. Like lately, like an album I can think of that I really like lately is the latest Tame Impala album. But you got to sit down with that thing and enjoy it as an entire album, like you would a Radiohead album or a Bjork album or anything. Whereas, you know, if you're going to enjoy an album that way, you want to feel the whole thing and why the artist or band put these songs in this order. I still find that enjoyable.
Well, yeah, it's really a snapshot of the last year or two of that band or artist's life, you know, that they're documenting, right. Documenting through their music. And I've always loved records for that very reason, because you're actually able to feel it versus just a single here or there. You can't really get the full vibe.
Yeah, man, and speaking of the full vibe, we've been getting all kind of good vibes around here, thanks to all the listeners of Krista Makes a Podcast. And the reason for that is because of the generosity of the people that listen and go to KristaMakesADifference.com and contribute to our monthly charities. Last month, it was Big Brothers, Big Sisters of the Laurel Region, and you guys absolutely killed it. And this month, it's Gilda's Club Middle Tennessee, which is an awesome charity that Chris can tell you about right now.
Yeah, Gilda's Club Middle Tennessee is a cancer charity, and this one's near and dear to my heart. Matt Yonker, the drummer for Less Than Jake, his wife Allison, has been working with Gilda's Club for over 15 years. And again, please go to KristaMakesADifference.com. It'll link to their site where you can donate. I know cancer affects pretty much everybody in the world that I've ever met or known. Their families have been affected somehow, some way by cancer. So if you could donate, that would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, from a personal standpoint, my grandfather passed away from cancer. I've had an aunt who's been battling stage 4 pancreatic cancer for years and years, but thankfully she's been kicking its ass, which, you know, that's one of the most deadly kinds of cancer you can get. But so I've felt fortunate that she's able to do that. But my point being that we can all relate to having someone close to us or ourselves having cancer. And this is just a great charity. So if you guys can donate even a buck or $2 or $5 or $10 or whatever you can give, it will go a long way. And, you know, I don't mean to keep bringing this up, but we do supply a free podcast here. So, you know, all we ask is that if you can afford to, you know, throw a few bucks towards ChrisTomakesADifference.com.
We would really appreciate it. And so many great things happening here in the month of October. I just want to give another mention that Less Than Jake, we announced our new record, Silver Linings, on October 1st. The record will be coming out on December 11th. You can go to Pure Noise Records and get all the associated bundles and everything with the record. Our first single and video is up. It's called Lie to Me. And can't wait for everybody to hear the rest of the record. The feedback has been amazing so far. I want to thank each and every one of you. And if you could, I am having an absolute blast producing your songs and collaborating with you live via one-on-one Zoom sessions. So please hit me up at chrisdemakes@gmail.com and we'll work on your tunes. I would love that. And if you haven't already, please join our Facebook group, Chris Demakes a Podcast Facebook group. It's free to join. We'd love to have you be a part of it. Lots of great interaction and fun in there. And if you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, please do. And please leave a review. Chris loves reviews.
I absolutely love them. And I love sending you a text with a screenshot of a great review from iTunes. It's exciting to me. And I would like to say one more thing. I can definitely vouch for the quality of the new Less Than Jake album. And I can do that because I've been putting together some lyric videos for you guys for some of the songs. And despite the fact that I now hear these songs over and over and over and over while I make the lyrics dance on the screen, I'm not sick of them yet, man. In fact, I like them more and more. And now I know the words to a couple songs on the album. So everybody's going to be psyched about this album. I can tell you that for sure.
And I didn't even pay Chris to say that. Thank you, Chris.
You're paying me to do the lyric videos.
Right on. Well, hey, thanks to each and everyone out there for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.